Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile.
With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
It's the Drink Talking with the Thinking Drinkers, Ben McFarland and Tom Sandon, and Mistress of Wine, Sam Capon. All the booze news and views from Absinthe to Zinfandel.
I demand to have some booze.
This week, co-starring Barry from Watford, aka Alex Lowe.
Hello everyone, welcome back to our podcast, It's The Drink Talking. We're here again, a new year, new start, new me, new yous, I'm sure. And today, to start the new year off, we've got a special guest with us as well. We've got Alex Lowe. Welcome, Alex, to the show.
Hello.
Yay.
Hello. Thank you for having me.
Oh, well, you're very welcome. You're our second superstar guest, so it's great to have an extra voice on here to break up the monotony of our boring. So we're going to start with a spit or swallow as normal, Alex.
Yes.
So this is just two things that we like or dislike about the world of drink.
Super.
And as this is the first podcast back, the obvious choice was to talk about January. Generally, I don't know how you feel, Alex, or indeed any of us, and I should say I haven't even introduced you.
Come on, Tom.
So it's all about Alex.
Don't worry about them. Come on.
I am here, of course. My name's Tom. I'm the spirits expert, and I'm here with Ben.
Hello.
My other thinking drinker. Sorry, Ben. How are you?
Very good, thank you.
Have you had a good Christmas?
Yeah, it was great. I loved it. I like it more often.
It was well worth bringing you in there. And Sam as well, our wine expert.
Hello, Happy New Year.
Happy New Year, Sam. How are you? Are you okay?
I'm very well, thanks very much. I've just done 3 days no booze and my liver is very grateful.
Okay, great. 3 days is fair enough.
Yeah. I'm not doing a month.
No.
I won't do the week. I'll probably have a drink tonight.
No,
I don't. Or we'll be having a drink in the next...
Oh, now, yes.
So well done.
Well done. I would suggest that having a whole month off is absurd behaviour, so...
Well, I have a birthday in January, so right in the middle, as does Alex.
Yes, I do, yeah.
I never do dry January because I end up celebrating my birthday.
I've also got a slight resistance to that sort of thing that everyone joins in with Movember.
Veganry this year as well is all about. So dry January, it's now vegan. I don't know how you say it. Veganary?
Vaginary?
Vaginary, exactly.
So
I'd be interested in that.
That one. There's a lot.
Well, who wouldn't, Ben? Who wouldn't? Well, heterosexual women, I suppose. Less so. As interested. It's quite mundane to them, I imagine. Anyway, my spit is about January. That's my big gripe.
January in general.
I think it's fair to say it's a very long month.
Not as bad as February. Even though it's short.
Well, February's worse. I don't know. January comes off the back of lots of celebratory times.
I always find, January, no one's got any money, have they? If we're trying to do gigs or, I'm doing a stand-up thing or whatever, no one has any money to spend on tickets. Thinking about that, that's been the case for some other months as well. But January and February, pretty miserable. I think you do need a drink to cheer yourself up. Not that I'm advocating that to anyone out there, but...
Well, I think one of the more recent things with January has become this dry January. This is quite... I don't remember it, Ben, when we were kids.
No.
I don't remember.
But
there
was the 70s and 80s. I think it was the health trend kick wasn't quite so prevalent.
No, that's right.
I suggested
I think that everyone's always sort of decided to take it a bit easier in January, but have a whole month off and call it dry January is a bit much. I wouldn't want to use this as an opportunity to lambast people who decide to give up alcohol for a month. That is their business, and more power to them. But I actually don't think it's a good idea to completely cut out alcohol for 1 month.
Yeah, I don't. I think it's pointless. If you're worried you're becoming an alcoholic, then it's probably a good idea to not have a drink. Or maybe people are trying to prove that, or people are trying to lose weight. But actually, as you said, January's a miserable month anyway. I get a huge amount of pleasure on a couple of glasses of wine on the weekend. And I think it just makes January even more poisonous on the back of having such a giggle in December.
Yeah. Just to open this up a little bit, and I don't want, I mean, I know you're all about drinking, but what I find occasionally, if I'm drinking a slightly rubbishy wine, more often than not is the case, if I'm feeling a bit down in those kind of months, January, February particularly, it can wake me up at 3 o'clock in the morning with the terrors.
Yeah, and, increasingly, I find.
Yeah, increasingly as I get older. But, I mean, particularly with spirits. I had a friend of mine who bought a single malt for me a few years back. And I thought, oh, this is, you know, I've never been one for spirits particularly. And I thought, you know, I'll give this a go. This must be something that, you know, this is what proper adults drink. And every time I had it, it would wake me up at 3 in the morning with absolute misery.
My brother-in-law has stopped drinking for that exact reason.
Funny how that happens.
I think it's an age thing. And I, for me as well, I find if I have like two glasses, I'm absolutely fine. Or like you're kind of working out your limit. So if I have like two glasses of wine, I go to sleep really nicely and I can basically sleep through minus needing a wee or whatever. And I feel...
wear a nappy. So
there's an actual name for it if you have to go for a pee in the night. And I have this thing, which means I'm never rested. I cannot go through a night without waking up.
That's interesting. That's an actual thing.
So I look like this.
My four-year-old is constantly up and we've tried to start bribing him with a 50p reward if he stays in bed. But now I'm starting to wonder if it's actually because he just needs a wee. He's got this thing as well.
Yeah. If he wees in his bed...
Well, no, I did say to him, you can get up if you need a wee. But what started happening is he now just gets up and says he needs a wee. And then we go to the toilet and said, no, I don't need a wee.
My son is at 6:30. Mum, I need a poo.
Okay, that's more serious. You definitely want to do that.
But often he doesn't. But he knows I won't tell him off for being out of bed. But no, I think a lot of that is the waking up thing. It really increases for me.
Alex, would you wake up anyway... Were you not to have a drink, would you wake up and worry about...
But it's not the anxiety, I think.
That is true. I have done... this is a lot of fun for everyone to listen to.
This is what I worry about. Everything. I mean, some big things.
I got things. I mean, I'm going to be 50 next week. That is weighing so heavily.
Is it really?
My God, I never thought it would. I'd just carry on. But it suddenly, it's throwing everything into sharp focus. What have I done with my time? Where am I going? It's all.
Did you have a crisis at 40?
No, not really. I didn't. But it's not that old, 40. But I mean, 50 is not remotely young. I mean, that really is a watershed. But I mean, I never...
I walked 40 and by with a breeze. I thought, I just don't care about age anymore.
Are you 40?
You're making me worry now.
We're currently all in our 40s. Yeah, we're still.
For one more week,
Only. Yeah, but I mean, that's the only thing. And I'm sure there's people listening who feel a similar thing. But then I think, you know, should I give up my sort of ridiculous career? Should I start something else? But I think probably the truth is it's about sorting out your own head, because you'd end up in some horrible job and a week later going, how did I end up here? This is awful.
Yeah, but that's a general thing of I still think, what am I going to do when I grow up?
And
I realise that this is it.
I mean, the truth is, I've been an actor all my life. Yeah. I was a child actor as well. Nobody is going to employ me. Even if I, the job market's not going to go, where you been? You've been acting or just what we need, an actor.
But isn't there a lot to be said, Alex, for... when you're reappraising like age in your life, how important it is doing something that you love, and that this is it. This is your one shot. And if you really drill it down to what you love, what makes you happy, suddenly you go, God, life's actually quite easy.
Have a glass of wine.
Not too much, but don't give up.
Don't give up alcohol for an entire month, because it could be the last month you're here. Which brings us neatly back onto my spits, which we're sort of straying away from.
You carry on, because I've got some facts about January.
The point really wasn't just about the fact that January is miserable and that we don't drink. It's just this surge of anti-drinking media that we're swamped with and the rhetoric around drinking and how everyone's got a story about giving up, whether they're writing for The Spectator or they're writing for The Guardian. It's just a wave after wave of, I gave up drinking, my life's so much better. And
but also,
just
what
do
I resent
it, guys,
is,
stop
this,
drinking.
Is the kind of cyclical nature of it. So, for example, you know when you pick up that magazine or paper in the beginning of January, it's all health, exercising, dieting, and it's like having to like flagellate yourself for having fun in December. Yeah. And it's been like, well, can't we just be a bit more moderate all the time?
Well, there
rather
you go,
than have
Sam.
This, you know, these blocks of all or nothing. Mm. And it's just like,
I think
I actually find it quite annoying.
Drink less, drink better. Drink less throughout the year.
Exactly.
Oh, that's
then
a good one.
And then you... Yeah, thank you, Alex. That is our catchphrase.
Drink less, drink better.
Yeah, throughout the year. And just don't behave like a completely deranged chimp throughout December. Yeah, yeah. And then in January, you won't be sitting there going, I can't even have one glass of wine in the evening just to get through it. But also, some of the things that are coming out at the moment, which simply cannot have just been discovered, the Cambridge scientists who've revealed this month... Mm. Coincidentally, that drinking they've discovered does destroy our DNA in some way and can contribute to cancer. It's like, well, you didn't just find that out on the 2nd of January. You've been sitting on this and you didn't put that out in December because
it's a
bit boo-hoo and everyone wants to have a nice time. And then January, boom, we're hit with all this really depressing...
But how does... If my DNA is deteriorating, does that not just affect my offspring?
Well, it repairs itself. So acetaldehyde, the body produces, which is actually detrimental to your DNA strands. But then they repair themselves, in a way that's more susceptible to cancer. Apparently, I am not a scientist. However, that's the news story that's being pumped out in January. And I just think, well, they've known that for some time. Yeah. Professor Nutt, who's by all accounts
he's the one that comes up with the anaesthetic.
He's a man who said actually that he once said that taking ecstasy was less dangerous than riding a horse. I don't know if he meant taking horse. but either way, he got into a bit of trouble about that. But he synthesized alcohol and reckons that in 10 years he'll have a drug that gives you all the effects of alcohol without any of the harmful effects. So all the nice, relaxed feeling without drinking alcohol.
Shite. Because for me, drinking alcohol is all about the taste of it. And sometimes actually the effects are a pain. Stop. I don't drink to get drunk. I drink because I enjoy the taste.
This
won't do that.
Sounds exactly like the sort of 1950s sci-fi where we all take a pill. Mm. Yeah. You won't need to enjoy. It's absolute cobblers. And I'd like to say to Professor Nuts, get on your horse, take some LSD, and ride out of town, old son. It's all a load of bunkum.
Totally.
Ooh, bunkum. That's a good word.
Yes. Although, if he does nail that, then he's probably going to make a few quid, isn't he?
He is, and that's why it's a good time to put that new story out again, because January's a good month for Professor Nutt. It's good for business. It's not good for our business. People not drinking in pubs and not buying alcohol would be put out of work. So I think that January is a bad enough month. I should also say I'm not a big fan of the reaction to people who are giving up alcohol, including the reaction from bars who say, dry January, how about a dry wine? Or a dry gin martini. I'm not saying that the people who give up alcohol for January should be lambasted in any way. I just think the whole movement of anti-alcohol rhetoric is just a bit...
Nanny state.
Galling.
Well, there we go.
Nanny
state. Thank you, Alex.
Thank you.
So there you go.
Well done. Like it. I agree.
Booze. Let's have a booze up.
Yes. So that was my spit, January, the whole of January and all that happens in it. My swallow this week is all about drinking and people who've championed drinking in the face of prohibition. And it's all about a group of New Zealanders who set up a sandcastle in coastal waters. There was a beach that banned alcohol, and I don't know how you pronounce this, Sam, so I'm going to go to you as our New Zealand expert, the Tairua Estate on the Coromandel Peninsula. Anyway, they have a ban on alcohol there, and these guys decided to set up a bar in international waters.
Oh, brilliant.
So they built a huge sandcastle in the sea just off the coast, and they put a picnic bench on there. I mean, they really went to town on the decor. And then they started drinking there in the morning on New Year's Eve. And in fact, what was nice about it was no one did them for it. And the police actually said, well, fair play. And
if we so how do people get out there?
Well, oh, it's like about 5 inches from the shore.
It's not actually deep.
It's hilarious.
And the tide was out when they built it, and then the tide comes in. I mean, how they get home is probably more the issue. They have to keep drinking there until the tide goes out again.
But what's hilarious, as Tom said, is actually the mayor basically praised the group. That's the one thing I absolutely love, the inventiveness of our people.
Yeah,
you know, they just thought, actually, all the law enforcement thought it was hilarious that this group of people had found a way around the non-drinking issue, and they were left there in peace and quiet, nothing happened.
And drink just driving the ingenuity of humanity, which is why it's so crucial to our survival as a species.
Absolutely.
And so that's almost like in your face, Dry January. we're building sandcastles and drinking on them. Have that. So that was my swallow.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Life is full of what-ifs, some awesome, like what if AI could fold your laundry? And some, well, less awesome, like what if you have unexpected medical costs? UnitedHealthcare can help get you covered with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. They supplement your primary plan to help you manage out-of-pocket costs. No deductibles, no enrollment periods, and especially no more what-ifs. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
You're listening to It's the Drink Talking.
It is time for a tasting. Now, Alex, we understand you like a drink and you perhaps would err on the side of wine as a choice. Would that be fair to say?
Yes, I think that with Mrs. Lowe at home, we have a bottle of wine. Mostly err on the side of white nowadays. Okay. But yeah, we're wine drinkers at home.
Sort of just ticks over. You just have like a bottle
on the go.
On the go.
I mean, we don't tend to have any sort of wine cellar or even, you know, one of us says, let's have some wine, I go down to our local shop, purchase a bottle of wine, maybe two of a weekend.
And what's your policy when you're buying a wine?
Very simple. Very, very simple. I look for the most expensive, then I go down sort of one or two. Mm. But my vintner, is that the word? Yeah. Is only my local newsagent.
So it's like a Londis.
Is it a Londis?
No, it's not a Londis. Oh.
Is it an independent local newsagent?
God, it's hard to say. I mean, it's on the crap side. I mean, there's no question. It's not. There's nothing flash about it.
Good.
I'll go for sort of brands I'm familiar with, and I don't think I spend less than £8.
Okay, that's where I'm at. Are you impressed by a pencil drawing of a chateau?
I like that. I don't like the sort of gimmicky, something called Old Bastard or something.
Not interested in that.
Yeah. I like something that looks sort of traditional.
Premium.
I'm also a sucker for the Made Up Wine Award, which has got a little sticker on it.
Sam is a gun for hire.
What, wine awards?
I'm a master of wine, and one of the things I do is judge at wine awards.
Yeah,
so
really?
those stickers.
Some are important, but some.
Yeah, the ones I do are important.
Are they
obviously.
Now?
Obviously.
Really? Okay.
Are you paid for the ones you do?
Of course I am.
Yeah.
All right, so you're paid for the check.
So basically, you turn up and you, over the course of a day, we have to taste about 100 wines, so we do obviously spit. And you're in a panel, I lead a panel, and then you basically give the wine a score, which equates to like gold, silver, bronze, or what have you. and then it'll get awarded a sticker.
Yeah, yeah. How many are there?
Oh, there's massive.
About hundreds.
Yeah, I'd have thought so. But they've got some really big ones in sort of Australia, in obviously in Paris, in Brussels. Mm. I was asked to judge at some in September in China. So they're just quite keen to get into that scene. That's really interesting. But, you know, they're just a really exciting emerging market.
But as a general rule, if I go down to my local news, I'm often thinking, God, what is this I'm drinking? It wouldn't be out of the question to be drinking something that's all right. It's not full of chemicals and a load of rubbish. I mean, those major high street labels.
Yeah, I'm quite pro big brands.
Yes.
And I think the wine trade can be a little bit divisive with the more like old-fashioned premium area and then the big brands. But the big brands almost a bit like champagne in that they're trying to be homogenous. You know, they're trying to get out a product that's really fruity, really enjoyable. And they've got really talented winemakers, you know, behind the scene. And there's this whole thing about natural wine, this whole trend, which implies that the rest of the wine isn't natural. Mm. But there's very little chemicals in wine. You know, you've got the grapes, you press them, there'll be some sulfur dioxide in there as a preservative to stop it oxidising.
My favourite.
That's pretty much
it. I love
it. I love a bit of SO2. Yeah. And that's pretty much it. That's much the only chemical in wine. Yeah.
So in our podcast, we do a tasting. So it would be Sam's tasting today, so we thought it would be appropriate. Yeah,
they're red wines, and I've got two red wines, and I thought today, because I couldn't believe we haven't done this yet, we'd look at the grape Cabernet Sauvignon.
Oh, yes.
So we've got...
that's my favourite.
So I thought they're nice kind of... Two Cabernet Sauvignons. One is from Bordeaux, so a more traditional, old school. Ben, you'll like this. We're going to taste this one first.
It's got a line drawing of a Chateau on it.
So it looks quite premium, but we'll taste them both and we'll see what you prefer.
Tom, is that an Australian wine? It's got a cricket theme.
We've just come off the back of
Ben, can you pass me the glasses?
Very impressive Ashes tour for anyone who's listening in 2019 to this podcast. if you are listening now, that was pretty disastrous.
No, this is the thing. I mean, my good lady wife, she does like a French.
French
she
number.
Likes, the as you said, a more traditional wine taste. She's not so mad on the New World. I don't mind a Shiraz or something from Australia, but she always describes it as cough medicine.
Well, you know what is interesting? Some can be so fruity that they can taste like blackcurrant pastels
that's what she doesn't like.
But I love it. I love the fact that everyone's different. Everyone's got their own personal, I don't know, whether it's the amount of taste buds or what have you. So here we are in Bordeaux, in the Médoc. So basically you've got the River Gironde that runs through Bordeaux, and you've got wines on the right bank, which tend to be Merlot dominated, and then those on the left bank, which tend to be Cabernet. So this is 65% Cabernet Sauvignon and the rest is Merlot. But it's 2006 and we can see that it's...
this is quality. 2006?
How much is this?
It's got legs on it.
So legs are alcohol.
See, Alex is bang right in.
Can I comment on Alex's holding of the wine glass by the stem as you are meant to? And he's got quite a nice little swirling technique going on there. And he smelt it. Alex is a bit of a dark horse.
He's a swirler.
So yes, this is Cabernet dominant. And the thing about Cabernet is it's a really tiny berry. So you tend to produce wines that are quite dark. And it's got lots of phenolics in it. So it's got lots of colour, lots of structure, lots of tannin. So they're very good at ageing. And it's also why often it's blended with something a bit softer like Merlot. Mm. But Cabernet is a noble grape. And it's one of the easiest to distinguish if you're tasting it blind because of the colour, the structure, and also really distinct kind of... Let's see what you chaps get smell-wise.
It's not me if I'm getting too technical, but can you get pissed just smelling it?
No. But I know what you mean.
Professor
Sometimes...
Nutt is all over the
place. Killjoy.
Oh, and that's what I'm saying. The legs, Alex, are basically alcohol. So this suggests it's quite alcoholic, but that's unusual for Bordeaux. Where is it?
No, I would tend to drink this wine with food or after food. If I were to have a wine with cheese, and we've said many times there are so many better things to have
you
with cheese.
You don't often have cheese with breakfast, so I don't know why. Right.
So I tend to have something else going on next to this, because it seems quite dry and a lot thinner than I'd expect, because I expect it to be quite full and rich as a wine.
The one we're tasting next is, so Cabernet is really structured, but the thing about Bordeaux, and 2006 was a good vintage in Bordeaux, but it's got a Mediterranean-ish climate, but it's not mega, 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 mega hot. It does produce, you know, quite refined wines. They're not really soupy. They're not mega ripe and sort of mega concentrated. I mean, I'd say claret, you know, is medium bodied. Mm. Also, this is a really good example. Black curranty.
Yes, I was just going to say.
So kind of cassis and also French oak here. It's had like 10, 12 months in French oak, which gives some spice. And claret's often described as quite cedary, that kind of slightly spicy wood, quite fresh acid.
Nice. And sorry, how much tannins. Is that?
Jess, it's quite complicated because you either buy the mixed case of six or you get the single bottle price. I think if you buy the mixed case, it's $13.99.
Okay.
God, that's all right, isn't it? For 2006? I haven't actually tried it yet, so here we go.
Go on, Alex.
I mean, you are a step ahead of me in terms of pricing, Alex. I would look for $6.99, $5.99, really. So I've started buying a lot of Chardonnay in Co-op because they're under the £5 mark because no one else is buying Chardonnays because of the reputation. But but it's brilliant because I'm just filling my boots with Chardonnay at the moment.
I love Chardonnay. It's my fave.
Yeah, it's really tasty.
I really love it.
I tend to pour a glass of wine when I'm making dinner. And then last night I had to go up and read my son an annoying little man that he is a bedtime story. I poured the glass of wine and it started to warm up in the half an hour it took to get through that process. And as it warmed up, I have to say, it started to lose its appeal. White wine I like really properly chilled. Yeah, so
chilling white wine, you want to chill it enough because you want it to be fresh and crisp, but actually don't want to chill it too much because then it kind of destroys sort of some of the flavours and whatnot. I've just discovered they're called like wine stones. Right. And also,
they sound painful.
Yeah.
Or sexual. I met a woman on New Year's Eve who was saying that you can get these stones that, you know,
Wait.
Hold on. Let me just rewind. I mean, I assume both genders can enjoy these stones in some way, form or another.
I don't know anything about them.
And you put them in your mouth, I assume, do you?
Pelvic floor exercises, I think, is the point of them.
Right, okay, that's not a sexual thing. That's actually it's rehabilitation, isn't it?
Isn't it?
Combination of the two, I suggest.
It just reminds me. I was in Tesco's yesterday, and I said to one of the women in there, "Have you got eggs up aisle two?" She said, "No, it's just the way I walk."
Boom.
Boom.
Boom, boom, boom.
That's a good one.
So we're now on the second wine. So did we like the claret?
I did, yes.
Yeah, I did. It wasn't quite what I expected, actually. A very, very sort of fruity... maybe it's just the way that every time you drink wine, it doesn't taste as you imagine it to. You expect it to taste like red currant, black currant. But didn't feel very bold, very robust.
I think they kind of reflect their cultures, don't they? I say Australians... I love Australians.
Steady.
But they are fairly...
Assertive.
Eddie Jones, for instance, the rugby coach.
Confident.
He says it out of his mind.
Full of themselves.
You know, kind of stuff. And they're not massively nuanced.
They're common as muck.
Even not Australian flu, which is apparently everyone's getting that. And that's
not
nuanced at all.
Down,
it's fucking awful from what I've
heard. Worse than swine flu, apparently.
Yeah.
But one thing I would say is so much of it is climate. You know, you've got the grapes on the vine, they're ripening in the sun or the non-existent sun. And how much sugars are in the grape resulting from the sun then completely, you know, gets fermented out and dictates the style of the wine. So the structure, the weight, the flavour, etc. 2006, you can see this is now like a nearly over 11-year-old wine, right? The claret. And it still had a really good colour, quite a lot of fruit, was holding up really, really well for an 11-year wine. Mm. But it is quite restrained, quite elegant. It's a food wine, definitely, with those tannins. Probably most Cabernets are. And I correct myself, it was $11.99 if you buy six. It was $13.99 if you get a bottle.
Wow. Okay.
So that's pretty good value,
From Majestic.
And our next one is also from Majestic, and it's called the Jim Barry.
Can I just say a quick word for Majestic? I'd like to apologise to them because I took my 3-year-old there before Christmas.
Oh, yeah.
And he's pushing the trolley around.
No.
Which was all right. It was okay. And then I left him for a minute because I got distracted. And he started putting the bottles in.
Did he break anything?
Only three.
Okay.
And the guy came over and he was clearly very angry. And I said, look, I'm going to pay for them. And I got to two and he was like, don't worry about it.
Really?
Oh, so I like to say that.
Majestic Ealing. Majestic. They're very good guys.
Oh, yeah. Good.
Okay.
And so this one actually... Yeah, good place for children.
Great place for kids.
We were going to go to Snakes and Ladders, soft play, but I thought, fuck it, let's go to Wine Shop.
You can't break anything in those places, can you? Let's go somewhere we can really break some stuff.
I'm not sure I actually said the name of the claret. Chateau Bonnac. Actually, you're the French mother.
Chateau Bonnac.
Sounds crazy.
You just say it like, remember the lips forward, Sam.
Rue Bourgeois, Médoc.
Yeah. I just hope we get onto this next one. I have to say, there's a bit of gimmicky stuff going on here. There's a cricketer on the front. There's a story about a cover drive on the back. This might be
Alex. It's got a medal there.
It's got a medal.
It's got all going on.
Yeah, these are all things.
It's got a silver medal on it.
The Sydney Royal. Alex would turn around and say, "No, thank you."
I'd say no, thank you.
Well, especially it's a silver medal. It's not even a gold.
That's pretty good. That means it's won between 90 to 94 points.
Yeah,
that's pretty good. Gold's really hard. So this is called Jim Barry Cover Drive. It's Cabernet Sauvignon. A single bottle price is $14.99, wow, but mixed case is $10.99. Jim Barry. Isn't it? I'm more suspicious of that. Jim Barry, great winery. I think they were named an Australian Winery of the Year. And it's got the cricket bat and the man playing cricket on it because the vineyards are actually where an old cricket ground used to be.
Okay.
It's not.
I mean, it is pretentious to have this description of the cover driving cricket. But since it's by Jim Barry, I thought my Barry from Watford character might.
Yes!
Here we go. As follows. The cover drive is one of the most classic shots in cricket. I was inspired to name our wine in honour of this masterly stroke, which I've had a masterly stroke a couple of years ago, after purchasing a retired cricket ground in the Coonawarra. I don't know what that is. My quest for a piece of the... And so it goes on. It's tedious, it's pretentious. Let's try it.
Thanks, Baz.
He's gone now.
And this has been aged for 12 months in 50% French and 50% American oak, which is that lovely spice. And
vanilla.
This is quite
I'm
a different. Yeah. And this is really. To me, this is delicious.
Yeah, this is.
I like both wines, but I like fruit. I do like fruit.
Yeah, that's good.
Yeah. You're lucky because you should eat five.
Made for fruit.
You need to eat five pieces a
day
as well.
So this is my first of the day.
Yeah.
And it's probably got quite high alcohol. Ben, have a quick look.
14.
Yeah. 14. It tastes thick.
14.
One of my main criteria for choosing wine.
Do you know,
never go below, 12?
Well, it's quite hard to go below 12.
What would be the point of that?
Did you know that it's imported by a company in Harpenden?
Which is where I live. We should say,
you played Harpenden, didn't you? Angelos and Barry, we do a double act and we played Harpenden.
Yes.
Enjoyed it very much. Yes, and it made me think that, you know, I live near Watford. Quite nice, Harpenden.
Do you live near Watford? So Barry from Watford, who was
I live in the arty section.
The enclave.
What I call the crouch end of Watford.
The crouchand
of Watford. Yeah. For anyone listening outside of North London, and I assume there are. crouch end is a sort of arty media hangout where I used to live for many years. It's full of actors wandering around with nothing to do all day. So when we had our kids, we moved out to the suburbs.
Okay.
And we live in this little arty Edwardian enclave of Watford.
Okay. I'm a Watford football fan, so I know Watford very well.
Yeah, yeah.
I would go there at weekends to watch football there. So I'm familiar with the place, but I would never live there.
And did Barry from Watford is a character?
Well, Barry from Watford is based on my Cockney forebears from South East London, who all moved to the suburbs during the war because they were getting bombed. And I think there was a move to get people out into the sort of green belt, and they moved out to South Harrow, and my nan and granddad had a greengrocer's in South Harrow and then a fish stall, and they were sort of proper old companies in a way that you don't hear people talking. They don't do it so much nowadays, you see. But of course I was brought up in Pinner, so I'm nice and middle class, you know, and I think they probably thought we were a little bit snobby, middle-classy types. But sadly, all those people have gone now. But that sort of post-war old person is what I remember growing up. And I sometimes think, you know, the kids don't really know that now because you... Old people, as I remember them, are not really what they used to be.
No,
they're dressing like... They're us, But I mean, you know, you see them, my wife calls them 1661s, you know, from the back. You think, well, she's 16, she turns around, Jesus! Yeah. You know, and they're wearing what their grandchildren are wearing and they've got hair like their grandchildren. Yeah. You go, look, have some dignity, you know, just grow old. You don't have to be like your 16-year-old grandchildren.
I'm looking forward to it, just wearing
it's great,
you know, beige slacks and not caring about
flammable.
Yeah,
as I get older, I use an expression to someone today in the text. In the old days, I wouldn't have used. It was something like, "It happened to me out of the blue." I wrote, and it was all a bit. Kind of, I mean, that's a terrible example, but it was all a bit sort of lovely and gentle. Mm. And a few years ago, I wouldn't have done that. I'd have said, you know, I'd have used an expletive. Or I just think, you know what. I just want to express myself. Gentle, I want to be gentle. Who wants to be a horrible...
I'm too tired
for the anger.
Kids, it's like, no more, just leave me alone. Yeah. I get the being alone thing as well, much more as I get
Oh, my God,
older,
I've had this
being
conversation.
Alone.
But I used to look at elderly people and shuffling along on their own, and I used to have this unnatural sorrow. Like, oh, looking at them thinking, God, they're so lonely.
But
as I get older, I think, I want to be them. I want to be lonely.
It often happens when people from outside of London go, oh God, isn't it miserable on the tube? No one talking to each other. Look, people want a little bit of downtime to just have a sort. Who wants to be having a conversation?
No.
I mean, you've all been on the train late at night, the sort of drunk train, where someone says, I'm just trying to have a conversation. Yeah, look at everyone boring. Yes. Everyone boring, not talking. It's like, mate, it's no offence to you. I just want a bit of quiet. It doesn't mean I'm miserable.
I just want to listen to Celine Dion.
I have two children.
I don't want to talk to you.
Yeah.
I talk to most of the people. Yeah. But just because you've had a drink doesn't mean want to. Anyway.
No. So you've been touring then? Are you finished the tour or what's going on in the new
year? We finished the tour. We did it. We do the show Angelos and Barry, the New Power Generation. We did it last year, went all around the country, and then we had a run at the Soho Theatre. Then we did it again this year. But, you know, we had a great time. Dan Skinner plays Angelos, I play Barry, and... You know, you hear about these double acts who hate each other. We get on very well. So
I know all about that.
So it's lovely.
Is it scary doing live shows?
Not really. I mean, I really come from that background of theatre and stuff, and I love doing that. And it keeps the adrenaline flowing.
Going.
It's so much better than sometimes I go and do a bit in a TV programme. It mainly involves turning up first thing in the morning, sitting in a porter cabin, having a cup of tea, worrying about the lines, falling asleep, doing it about sort of midday. Thank you very much. Goodbye. And you're off home. So it's lovely to remember what you liked about acting and doing that live stuff. The kind of adrenaline buzz is, it's like Gary Lineker when he gave up football. He could have gone into management and all that stuff. He thought, what is going to give me the same buzz? I know, I'll do live telly. So it's the same sort of getting on the stage. And I mean, it's nothing lovelier than people turning up to see you. And you think, gosh, I didn't know that anyone knew us up here.
It's always surprising us. We're looking through a curtain seeing a room full of people. You think, who are they?
These
are not friends and family. This might be working.
That's it. But, you know, we get on really well. And we have a good old laugh. And then we have a nice hotel. Not nice. A hotel.
Yeah, but you have separate rooms.
We have separate rooms.
We're not there yet.
Big deals.
So, I mean, we're sort of very well looked after by Live Nation.
That's good.
I mean, like, going on about the age thing again, in the old days, going to the Edinburgh Festival and what have you, kipping on people's floors, I just find I don't want to do that now.
Will you do the fringe? Because this will be our ninth consecutive or eighth consecutive fringe.
Funny enough, I was talking to Dan yesterday and we were thinking we might do the fringe.
Mm. We saw you at the fringe years ago. The one year...
Barry's bingo.
Oh, yeah.
Upstairs at the Pleasance.
Yeah, that's right. That's
really
right.
Good. Which we really
that's
enjoyed.
Good. Yeah, I was very nervous that year for some reason.
Oh, okay. You had some great... I mean, someone like... who put us onto you? Tim Vine, I think, was saying,
Tim
you've got
Vine,
to go and see this is the best thing I've seen at the Fringe.
Tim Vine, put out a tweet saying it's the best thing ever seen at the Fringe. I thought, oh, my God, isn't that great? Until I saw his show, which really is the best thing. And I thought,
seen that technically.
Honestly, his thing, he does his show for anyone who's interested, where he invites people literally straight out of the audience onto stage and he interviews them based on just what's written on the card, which is, what they do, where they live. And he improvises this stuff and they chime in. Quite often they don't chime in very much. And you think, that is an extraordinary skill.
Yeah.
Because it is just on the seat of his pants. Yeah. And I always think, you know, you can sort of fluff it a couple of times. And the audience, you can sense them going, oh, God, I feel very uncomfortable with this. It's not working. It's not working. But he doesn't drop the ball. It is phenomenal.
That's a skill. Yeah. That's
it really is. Skill. And so the moment I saw that, I thought, oh, yes, mine isn't quite the best.
That is the problem with the Fringe, isn't it?
Seeing
other people who are far superior to
one of the benefits of going to see a show that is really, really bad is you think, I'm here for 45 minutes, fuck.
Yeah.
But also it's going, we are not the worst thing here.
Yeah, there is that. There is.
Well, one year we went to see the Chinese State Circus, my wife and I, and there was a woman up there. No safety net, but highly dangerous. And my wife nudged me and said, you're right, you look a bit worried. I said, I'm just a bit worried about my show. And she said, you're worried. She's up there balancing on a fucking sorter by her foot. 100 foot in the air, and you're worried about a show. I thought, do you know what? You're right.
Yeah. Yes, it's a strange place. I mean, we will keep grinding away at it until the glories of television come knocking on our door, which means we'll be doing it for another 20 years, I'm sure. But when we first went there, we were just so full of enthusiasm for it, and we saw everything, we consumed everything, including a lot of alcohol.
We did
a lot of shows, probably half cut, and we've slowly learned to see it as a work anyway.
What's your policy with having a drink before?
I never do. I just, the horror of forgetting what I was going to say and not being as sharp. I think that's a slippery slope.
We've tried and tested.
We don't anymore.
Indulge.
So would you spit it out, do you?
Audience gets five drinks.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's all about the history of alcohol. And then we've got we've done a show called Legends of Liquor about all the great people that have used alcohol in the right way and inspired them.
Yeah.
And we have drink on stage, but there are theatrical ways of disguising the drink, i.e. water for raspberries, and then some tea.
Yeah, we tend to be a bit less useful doing that.
We don't actually, because... Yeah, over 26 nights.
Oh, God, yeah.
And it's not, we still go for a beer afterwards just to commiserate or celebrate, depending on how it's gone.
The other thing is Dan, he's quite strict about what he puts into his body.
Sure.
So much so that I get in the van afterwards and one of my riders was some wine gums. And you would think
you're
I was
to put crack.
On crack cocaine.
Yeah, really?
Oh, you can have those. Oh, well, good. Oh, yeah, you've got some dried nuts or something. Yeah.
Really?
I mean, honestly, it's the nanny
body
state.
The
it is so ridiculous. And we're going, go on, help yourself if that's what you want. But all I'm saying is you'll have a rush of that. And then, I mean, what that is sugar boiled down. It's like, look.
They're so tasty, though.
It's just a bloody packet of wine gums.
There's no wine in it.
If you want to go back and listen to some of our podcasts, we had a massive rant about pub snacks
a
few podcasts ago, just because the way it's going with the vegetable crisps and less fat.
Come on.
Wasabi peanut.
It's muck, isn't it? But yeah, no, I find that. And fancy bars in the West End sort of... you said you've got any crisps and they think you had done a shit on the bar, you know. I mean, have you got any crisps? Well, yeah, that's the traditional British snack.
You know, I went one of the most shocking things I've experienced in recent years.
I told my son about that.
I went to an Indian restaurant.
Not that.
And I did a shit on the bar.
Yeah, a bar just to, you know, just to
Sam
set
here.
A stall out.
Yeah.
But then afterwards
literally.
I said...
literally.
I was like, can I have five Bobadoms?
Five Bobadoms, yeah.
And they went...
Don't do them.
You know those ultra posh kind of Indian
ones. I know the ones.
And you're like, what? No, come on. Yeah, they were like Papadons are beneath us.
Yeah.
Come on.
Really?
Yeah, we were, as a group, it
horrified.
Really...
Do you leave?
It defeated, the morale got lowered.
Mm. Mm.
And one more question about Barry.
Yeah.
I mean, I imagine he likes a drink. What would you think Margaret drink?
Well, they like, you know, those sort of drinks he used to get if he's got a bazooka. A bazooka or a Campari. It's like a little bit sophisticated. You know, a bazooka, a taboo.
A taboo.
Say it like that. And, you know, Christmas, a pint of Baileys, that sort of thing. But yeah, something a bit exotic
says,
I'm a guy, about a man about town. You know, like a cocktail. You know, that sort of thing.
Right, okay. That's good to know.
Thank you.
So what did you think about the wine then, Alex? Did you enjoy that?
I really like this one. It's slightly more robust. Chunky, I think, was the word used, than the previous one. I hate to say that for our European cousins, but I slightly prefer that.
Red cherry drops.
Yes.
Red chocolate with some black currant. And Coonawarra is the region. So Coonawarra is a famous strip of like red Terra Rossa soil,
yes,
where it famously grows Cabernet to a great effect.
I like it. The picture of the cricketer is still a bit raw for me.
Yeah, it is.
Get over it.
It's only a couple of weeks since. Yeah. I mean, if you want to talk about waking up in the middle of the night and feeling depressed,
God.
I kept turning on the ashes.
Oh, God.
Do we not win them?
We got battered. Because I was waking up at 5:30 with the kids and I was putting the radio on, and that was the thing that got me through the first hour of the morning of just almost comatose. All I had to listen to was them getting torn apart.
Even worse, just the highlights, because they'd already been bowled out.
It was already done, so I didn't get the programme.
What? It must be raining. I just had it on. They're not playing, and then they know they've been bowled out.
And what have you got coming up in 2018?
Big year for you, Alex? Yes, I'm doing a few bits as Clinton Baptiste, which is a character I played in Phoenix Nights. Yeah. Peter Kay gave me his blessing to go and do that, so I do Clinton every now and then.
Brilliant. Where are you doing that?
I'm doing that at... Do you know what? In February, I'm doing that up in Whitehaven, of all places. Yeah. I can't believe I agreed to go all the way up there because it cost me a lot of money. And that is with... Is it Jason Robinson, who's a rugby star?
Yeah. Wow.
So it's one of those evenings with him, and I'm the sort of warm-up guy. So how that's going to go, I do not know.
And then people can see you at the Edinburgh Fringe.
Dan and I, Angelos and Barry, we're writing a sitcom now. Somewhere down the line, you might, if anyone's listening to this, who knows what will happen to it, but we're trying to turn that into a pilot for telly. And
also, you've got your podcast, which I...
Podcast, The Angelos and Barry Show.
Which is you're recording at the Museum of Comedy.
We're doing... Oh, yes, that's right. The Museum of Comedy. Please come the 31st of January. It's in Bloomsbury, the Museum of Comedy, and it's a live podcast. It's a bit like Derek and Clive, but not quite as filthy.
It's fantastic.
Entirely made up. Okay.
I am a massive fan. And it's fantastic.
We played it in the van, in fact,
while we were touring.
And we played the Museum of Comedy. We have quite regulars there. And it's a lovely venue.
Yeah, it's nice, isn't it?
It's a bit quirky. And
it only holds 80 people.
Mm. Yeah, but
that's good for us.
Come on. If you put cabaret tables out, even less we find.
Just fill the room with tables.
Okay.
But we're there the night after.
Oh, I'd love you to come.
It's a very, very funny podcast.
What day of the week's that?
It's Wednesday.
Wednesday, yeah. So it's the Angelos and Barry Show. It's on iTunes, and the live show is on the 31st of January at the Museum of Comedy. Yeah. Please come. It's
funny. There.
Brilliant. Thank you very much, Alex.
Thank you for joining us.
It's been a pleasure to have you here.
Oh, lovely.
And share your stories. And thanks to everyone for listening.
Yeah.
I hope you have listened and enjoyed it. We'll look forward to giving you another podcast next week. So for now, cheers.
Ta-ta.
Cheers.
Bye.
Bye.
This was a Grand Cru podcast from 7 Digital.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. Hello Fresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. Hello Fresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.